Amy Phoenix, and I work in McAllister's Communications Department. I'm sure there's still some people calling in, so I'm going to go through a little housekeeping before we get started. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We've been just delighted at the response. We had nearly 100 people register, and certainly we know we've had a few cancellations, but we're very excited about the enthusiasm for the call so far. I thought I'd start off just telling people a little bit about who we expected to call in. We know we have alumni calling in from Bolivia, the Philippines, the UK, Germany, Canada, Puerto Rico. We have about half males and females. You represent all of the decades with three people from the 60s, seven from the 50s, 70 from the 70s, nine from the 80s, 16 from the 90s, and 17 from the aughts. We also have a number of parents who are calling in today, which is wonderful. We're happy to have your participation. So it should be a great group and a great conference call. To make sure everybody can hear with this many people on the line, we have actually muted all of the phone lines. And so you can hear us, but we can't hear background noise from your location or your voice. President Rosenberg will be taking your questions, and so we are taking email questions in real time, and you can email them to communications@mcallister.edu. And we expect the question period to start about 12:20 or 12:25. If you need to sign off early, you can just hang up. That won't be any disruption to other people on the phone. And if you want to review any part of the call when we're done, we will post an audio file online and send out that link to people so you could tell other people also. And lastly, because this is our first Old Main Forum, we want your feedback. We want to know if this is a good way to reach out and connect with parents and alumni, and so we will be emailing a short evaluation form after the phone call. Again, if you want to email questions or if you're having any concerns with the line, you can email us at communications@mcallister.edu. And I expect some people are still joining us, but I think I'm going to go ahead and welcome Brian, and he can tell us a little bit about what it's like on campus today.
Thank you, Amy. Welcome, everyone. I'm not sure whether to say good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, since you're coming to us from all parts of the country and all parts of the world, so I'll just say hello. I'll remind you that the good news about your being muted is that you can say whatever you'd like about my remarks, and you don't have to worry about us hearing you. What I will try to do is divide this call into three general sections. The first, as Amy suggested, will be a quick, broad update about the current state of the college. The second will be a review of our plans for the Janet Wallace Fine Arts Complex, and I know you received some images about that. And the third will be a period during which I'll try to respond to as many of your questions as I can. Some have been sent in. Please feel free to send in questions as the call is proceeding. As far as the college as a whole right now, there are just three or four general points that I wanted to make. First of all, I think that we are weathering the current recession in relatively strong terms compared to most of our peers. We've been fortunate in not having to lay off any faculty or staff and not having to make dramatic cuts in programs, and I think in preserving the quality of the student experience because we have been pretty careful stewards of the institution's resources. That's not to say that we haven't had to do some belt tightening. This year there's been a salary freeze, as many of you know, for faculty and staff. We have made cuts to many of our program budgets of anywhere from 5 to 7%. So we're doing our best to use our resources carefully, but we think that the quality of the student experience has been preserved, and that is, I think, confirmed by the fact that our retention rates and our student satisfaction levels are as high as they've ever been. I do want to say something about the really extraordinary commitment this year that I've seen from faculty and staff at the college. Despite the salary freeze and despite the fact that we have more students on campus right now than at any point since the early 70s, we have seen no diminution in the quality of programming and in their commitment to students. So I think they've really done a remarkable job. We have also gotten outstanding support from our alumni, which during an economic downturn is particularly important. I want to particularly compliment alumni for the work that they've done in helping students connect to the job market beyond the college. I was speaking a couple of weeks ago to a student who is graduating this year who is moving to Washington, D.C. He had 35 appointments with McAllister alumni in the Washington, D.C. area, moving from coffee shop to coffee shop over spring break. Ended up with two job offers and will be moving to Washington with a job in the summer. All three of his housemates also have jobs, and a lot of that is really thanks to the McAllister Network. We have done an excellent job this year, I think, of bringing alumni back to campus. We just had a program this past weekend during which we brought about two dozen alumni physicians back to campus to talk to pre-med students. And I would encourage all of you, alumni and parents, to think about ways that you can provide some assistance to students right now as they move from the college into a pretty challenging economic environment. As I think most of you know, we are engaged in the Step Forward campaign. That campaign, while we are working in a difficult fundraising environment, has been going very well. We've raised almost $123 million toward our goal of $150 million. And I think in a lot of ways more important than any financial goals is the impact that the campaign is having on campus and on our students. We've raised over $30 million for scholarship and student support, which makes an enormous difference in our ability to provide access to the college. We have, as I think most of you know, fully funded and opened the Leonard Center, our new athletics and wellness center, and that has made a dramatic difference in the quality of life on campus. McAllister students right now are far more likely than their peers across the country to engage in healthy exercise every week, and I think that is in large part a tribute to the quality of the building. We have opened the new home for the Institute for Global Citizenship, and we have opened one of the very few LEED Platinum buildings on any college campus in the United States, and we're very proud of that and what it says about the college's commitment to sustainability. So the campaign has already made a tremendous difference to McAllister, and we expect that it will continue to make a tremendous difference to the college. The one remaining capital project in the campaign, a building project, is the first phase of the renovation of the Janet Wallace Fine Arts Complex. And one of the things we wanted to do on this call is to share with you both some images and some of our thoughts about that project. First of all, just to speak about it in general, I think it is the belief of most of us here that the fine arts play a central role in any high-quality liberal arts education, and particularly at an institution that thinks about preparing students for world citizenship. The arts, maybe more than any other activity that we engage in, connect people across cultures and communities around the globe, transcend language very often, and so we think it's an extremely important part of the work that we do at McAllister. The arts, like the sciences, are also heavily facilities dependent. You can have great faculty, as we do, and great students, as we do, but if you don't have the right facilities, it's very, very difficult for students in the arts to engage in their work. And so what we're trying to do right now is provide facilities that the students and the faculty in the arts at McAllister really deserve, given the quality of work that we're doing. The Janet Wallace renovation is a large project. Janet Wallace, as most of you know, really is not one building, but it is four buildings, one devoted to studio art, one to music, one to theater and dance, and then a central core. And so the renovation of that facility really involves the expansion and renovation of four buildings. So we plan on doing this in phases, probably two. And what we're including in this campaign is the first phase of the Janet Wallace Fine Arts renovation. We decided, I should note, not to knock the building down, but to expand and renovate it for two primary reasons. One is financial. It is much more cost-efficient to renovate and expand the building. And I think the other is related to both sustainability and efficiency. That is, it is more sustainable to preserve a building when, like this one, it has many features more worth preserving. And there are certain features, both practical and historical, about that building that we don't want to lose. I will not take the time to take you through all of the images that we sent to you. I think that would consume too much of this call, and I invite you to look at all of those images at your convenience. So what I plan on doing is focusing on a limited number of those images and making some comments and giving you an overall sense of the scope and the goals of the project. So the first slide that I will say something about is number five. Oh, excuse me, it's number two, and it's the floor plan, which shows the portion of Janet Wallace that we will work on in the first phase of this project. You'll see from that floor plan that what we'll be working on is, first of all, the music building. So all of our facilities for music will be renovated and expanded. And we'll also be completely redoing the central core of the building, the portion of the building that's now mostly occupied by hallways and the art gallery will become a central fine arts commons. So the portion of the floor plan that's in color will be done in the first phase. The portion that is in gray will not be done in the first phase, and in the case of the art building and the theater dance building, will be addressed in the second phase. The humanities building is not part of this project, though its adjacency to Janet Wallace really makes interesting connections with the humanities building possible. The second slide that I'll say something about is number three, and that is the Shaw Field entrance to the building. Now, one of the challenges that we have with the Janet Wallace complex right now, as those of you who've gone in and out of it know, is that it really doesn't have a front door. Once you enter it, you're not exactly sure where you're going to be exiting, and you're never quite sure when you enter it where you're going to be. And so we wanted to create more of a central entry point to the building and to focus really on the student experience in doing that. Most students who enter Janet Wallace enter it from Shaw Field to the east. And so the Shaw Field entrance really will be the central entrance to the building. A couple of things to note about that entryway. First of all, you'll see that it takes one right into the Central Fine Arts Commons. So you enter right into a large, central, welcoming, multipurpose space, which is certainly not the case in the building right now. The second thing that you might notice is the way we're attempting to both draw light into the building and draw attention to the building through the use of light. One of the things that we rejected during the design phase of this project was having a large skylight constitute the entire roof of the central atrium. And we did that for a couple of reasons. Skylights are extremely energy inefficient, and so it would have increased both the heating and cooling costs in the building. And skylights make both the lighting and the temperature in a room very difficult to control. So what we've done instead with our architects is design what might be thought of as beacons. You can see one of them very clearly in the image. These are raised areas in the atrium that will have windows on three sides that will let light into the room, but will allow us to control both light and temperature much more effectively than skylights will. So that is the Shaw Field or east entrance to the building. Next, slide number four shows you the building from the north. This is what you would see if you came down McAllister Street. Again, there are a couple of things to notice. One is that the parking that currently exists in front of the building will be completely redone. A lot of the confusion will be taken away, and we will have a regular parking lot in front of the building. Something else to notice is the exterior. You'll see that it is a mix of colors. There is some brick in the exterior, and that's to establish some consonance and continuity with the rest of our campus, where there are a lot of brick buildings. But this is an arts building, and we also wanted to have a distinctive look and a distinctive presence. And so it's not entirely brick. The slate and the brown that you see in the image are metallic. They are anodized metal. And they are meant both to bring some color to the building and also to pick up something of the color and the feel of musical instruments in particular. They will be relatively easy to maintain. This kind of metal doesn't require repainting. They're also both cost and energy efficient. So this building will both look something like the buildings around it, but will look different. You'll also notice that it has a lot more windows than the current building, so that you can see into it and actually see students doing art, which is not something that is true of Janet Wallace right now. The next slide, number 5, takes you inside what we're calling the Central Arts Commons. This is a scene that shows daylight coming into the room. It also shows lights hanging down from the ceiling. This is what you will enter if you come in from the Shaw Field entrance to the building. A couple of things to comment upon about this space. First of all, we wanted it to be designed so that it was welcoming and could be used for multiple purposes. So we have it set up in this image as it would probably look on a typical day, when students could use it for sitting, for lounging, for informal activities. It could also be set up for a more formal dinner. It could be set up for speakers. The walls are both linear and neutrally colored because we wanted to maximize the opportunity to display student art. And so what you will see in the image are some theoretical examples of student art, but that's the way we're going to bring interest and color into the space, by using arts that the students have produced. And we also think it's a wonderful way of integrating visual art with the other arts that will connect with the space. All of the spaces are as soundproofed as possible, so under all of the balconies and behind all of the wood, there is soundproofing. So we think that the space will be acoustically very usable. Finally, you'll note in this image that if you look on the right side, you can see directly into the art gallery through the window. And if you look on the upper left side, you'll see that you can see upstairs into an arts media room that can also be sealed off with a curtain if they need different lighting in that space. The next image, number 6, is a look inside the new art gallery, which one will enter off the central space. It has a little bit more space than our current gallery, but most important, the space is much more usable. So you see it is a space with raised ceilings. It is a flexible space. It can be used as one large gallery or divided into two smaller galleries. It has visual access both to the exterior. You can see a window in the back that looks north. And also it has a visual entry into the atrium through a glass window. This will give us the ability to present exhibitions and to store art in ways that we cannot do so right now. One of the major problems with the current facility is we simply don't have any place properly to store and to curate art, and that will be remedied when we complete this renovation. The next image, number 7, is a look into one of the two large music rehearsal spaces that will be added to the music building. One of the main problems with our current music facility, I think arguably the largest problem, is the absence of appropriately soundproofed rehearsal space. Right now, if we have something taking place in the concert hall, all other practice activity in the building has to stop. Because we don't have appropriate soundproofing. And we also don't have appropriate space to accommodate our various musical ensembles. So there will be two large rehearsal rooms on the north side of the building. This is the larger of the two, will be chiefly used in all likelihood for instrumental ensembles for the orchestra. You can see that the design of the building attempts to pick up the colors of the exterior. You can see that it provides a large window so that people outside will be able to look into the building, it will also be appropriately soundproofed in every way so that students can use the space as frequently as possible. The next slide, number 8, shows you the lobby outside the music hall. If you've been to a concert at McAllister, you know that one of the problems is that we have no lobby. And so when you exit a concert, it tends to be something like a mosh pit. That will be remedied. So this is a larger lobby. And again, it integrates the arts. You'll see displayed along the wall examples of student artwork. So that quite literally, music and visual art are brought together in exactly the same space. This lobby feeds directly into that central atrium, and it will make it extremely flexible for activities that take place in the building and both at intermissions and before and after events. The next slide, number 9, is an important one. It shows you the interior of the renovated concert hall. Obviously, the concert hall is the centerpiece of any music building, and we've spent a great deal of time on this space. A couple of points to make. First of all, the single largest problem with the current concert hall is that the stage is too small. I just attended the choral concert, the spring choral concert last week, and it culminated in a performance of a Stravinsky piece that required all of our choirs plus an orchestra. And I have to tell you that I hope the people on stage liked one another because they were very close together. And our conductor could not fit on the stage. He actually had to have a little platform built so that he can conduct the orchestra and the chorus. In this renovation, the stage will be expanded so it can accommodate the larger number of students we have participating in music activities. We were not able to significantly increase the overall size of the hall. And again, the reason for that is both structural and financial. It is enormously expensive to move the walls of this concert hall. There are many things that can be said about early 60s architecture, but one thing that can be said is that they built solid walls. And so it would be a multi-million dollar enterprise to move the walls of this hall. It also would run the risk of dramatically changing the acoustics of the space that works acoustically very well. So we had to make some trade-offs. So what we ended up with is a concert hall that has a larger stage that preserves the same amount of seating as the current hall. But in order to do that, we had to remove the organ. So you'll notice that the organ that's in the current hall is not in this renovated space. We've also tried to do a couple of things. You'll notice that this is a space that does have a lot of curvilinear lines. So this is a place where we tried to break up some of the straight lines in the building, both in the ceiling and in the walls. I'm not sure it's that easy to tell from the image, but there's a lot of curvature to both. We tried to pick up both the color and the feel and the shape of musical instruments in the design of the space. Behind the black portions or the slate portions of the walls, which are a kind of metallic screen, are curtains. And those curtains will be used to make the space acoustically tunable. One of the challenges of our concert hall is that it has to be used for everything from a full orchestral concert to an individual student recital. And so it has to be tunable for many different purposes, and we will be able to do that with those curtains without the curtains being visible. So that's a quick sense of what we would like to do with the building. Just to give you a general sense of the proposed timeline, if our fundraising goes according to our ideal plans, we'd like to get approval from the Board of Trustees this fall to move ahead with construction. We'd like to begin construction in this coming winter. In Minnesota, it's always good to tear things down in the winter. And then in the spring, when things warm up, we would begin the building, and the overall time frame would be about the same as the Leonard Center. That is about 15 to 18 months. So we would be out of the building essentially for 1.5 academic years or 3 semesters, and then back in the building at the end of that period. The overall goal for fundraising for the project is $24 million. We've raised about $12.5 million. So we're more than halfway there. It'll be a challenge, but we're optimistic that we will reach our goal and get this project done.
Thanks so much, Brian. It's great to hear your energy and enthusiasm for this project, and people on the line seem to be excited about it too, judging by the questions that are coming in. If you haven't sent a question in and you have a question about Janet Wallace or anything else at the college, you can email it to communications@mcallister.edu. So I'm going to share some of these questions and kind of keep us moving quickly here. Michael Dickens, class of 1983 in Oakland, wants to hear your thoughts about how these renovations to Janet Wallace are going to impact McAllister and the college community.
Well, one of the things to remember about the arts at McAllister is that the number of students engaged in them far transcends the number of students who actually major in the arts. So I would say right now we have well over 100 students who participate in formal choral ensembles. We have over 60 students in our orchestra, which represents dramatic growth. And we have many students who participate as non-majors in formal and informal arts activities. So all those students will be impacted by this. But beyond this, one of the things we're trying to do is make connections, establish stronger connections between the arts and other disciplines on campus. One of the programs that we will be initiating over the next couple of years with some help from a grant from the Mellon Foundation is a program designed to connect the arts to other areas of our curriculum. So the arts and history, the arts and political science, the arts and the sciences. And so we'll be bringing to campus artists and speakers who can address those connections. And our hope is to have a kind of gradually spreading effect throughout the entire curriculum so that not just art students, but all students benefit from this. The art space, like the health and wellness space, is one of those spaces on campus where all segments of the community gather. And so we think that this space has the potential really to impact everybody.
Thanks so much. Catherine from the class of 2000 is wondering both whether this project will create more curatorial opportunities for students and to help curate exhibits, and also what will happen during construction. Where will students go to rehearse and practice during the construction period?
Both great questions. The answer to the first is a very strong yes. One of the things that is in the renovated building that I didn't point to in the images that I talked about was actual curatorial space that comes right off the art gallery. We do not have that now. And so we will have space both for our own gallery curator and for students who work with the curator to do curatorial work. We'll have storage space, so that unlike our current situation, we'll be able to accept gifts of art and appropriately store them. Right now, it's very difficult for us to do that. And we'll also be able to accept traveling exhibitions that we cannot accept now because we'll have appropriate storage conditions and curatorial space. So yes, and in fact, a lot of our current art students are interested in moving toward curatorial work as a career. And so I think this will be a great opportunity for them.
We have a parent, Jeff, in Green Bay, who has attended concerts here and notes, as anybody else has, that they're often very crowded, and sometimes they're standing room only, and he's curious about the capacity of the renovated space.
Right. As I said, I wish it could be larger. I think in some of our initial plans, we were looking at a hall that was larger by a couple of hundred seats than our current hall. But the problem with doing that is that it would have a kind of ripple effect and an effect to require us to redesign more or less the entire building. Once the walls for that concert hall come out, then all of the walls in the building have to be moved. And in effect, we're building a new building. And in any project like this, one has to make decisions to balance program and cost and practicality. At the end of the day, our decision was that this was first and foremost a teaching and learning space. And so while we would like to have a larger concert hall, we think that the one that we'll have will meet our needs most of the time. There will be times when the desire to attend a concert exceeds the capacity of the hall, and the two choices that we have in those cases would be to have more than one concert or to move the concert off-site. There are some halls that are very nearby that accommodate 500 to 600 people, and so if we really had to, we could move to one of those halls.
Right. So Don in Albuquerque, class of 51, is wondering, once we get this project done, what's the next priority for the college in terms of facilities?
Well, this project's going to take a long time to get done. I want to emphasize that this is phase one of Janet Wallace. And so clearly the first priority after this is phase two, which would be completing the work, and that would be renovating and expanding the facilities for studio art and for theater and dance. Those are very high priorities. The other facilities priority that I would acknowledge is a bookstore. I think that since the closing of what had been The Hungry Mind and then Ruminator, we've really been missing a bookstore that acts as a kind of center of intellectual life on campus. And it's something that we've been exploring. It's something that we would very much like to do. I think we probably would have done it more quickly if not for some of the financial challenges in the broader economy, but it's very much on our planning board, and we'd like to move ahead with it. And then just finally beyond that, we have to remember that buildings do get old, and so we talk about the new library, but the new library now is almost a quarter of a century old. And so even as we think about new buildings, we have to think a lot about maintaining, upgrading, and restoring our existing buildings. And so we can't eliminate those things from our priority list as well.
Anna, class of 2008 in Washington, wants to know what's going to happen with the pipe organ if you're taking it out of the concert hall.
The pipe organ will find, we hope, a happy home. There is a very active market for pipe organs, and so we will not dismantle it or destroy it. It will be preserved and in all likelihood sold to another organization or to a church that is looking for an organ and that can't afford to purchase a new one. And then we will take the funds that we realize from selling the organ and put those back into the funding for the Janet Wallace facility. So it will be used to help fund the building.
I'm going to move on now from questions about Janet Wallace to the more philosophical type of questions. And Kathy, who's the parent of a first-year student, is curious about, she's a high school teacher, and she's interested in your thoughts on what high school students should have to be prepared for college.
Well, that varies a lot depending on the kind of institution, obviously. I think by and large, the students who come to McAllister academically are in most ways extraordinarily well prepared. I confess to a bias as someone who taught English literature and writing for 15 years toward strong preparation and communication skills. I think our students, by and large, come in better prepared as writers than as speakers. I think one of the things we need to do better, both at McAllister and before students arrive at McAllister, is teach them to speak publicly. I think it's at least as important a skill as the ability to write well. And I'm not sure it's a skill that we teach as purposefully as we teach writing. So I strongly encourage students who are in high school to get involved in activities that will develop their communication skills, and in particular their public speaking skills. I think it is both intellectually and personally extremely important when you get to college.
Great, thank you. I just want to remind people, if you have questions, you can email them to communications@mcallister.edu. And Jake from the class of 2009, I think here in St. Paul, wants to know about the environmental standards that we're shooting for, I think, both in the Janet Wallace project and maybe in campus construction projects in general.
That's a great question, and I bet I know who Jake is. You know, McAllister's commitment to environmental sustainability is strong. One of the things that we determined to do when we became part of the American College and University President's climate commitment is to build and design any new buildings to at least the equivalent of LEED Silver certification. And so that will be our minimal goal for this project. That is not to say necessarily that we will seek official certification from LEED. The challenge of that, or the question that raises, is whether it's worth spending the money, and it's not inexpensive to have the LEED people come in and certify your building, whether we'd rather spend that money on the official certification process or on making the building more sustainable. But this building will be at least the equivalent of LEED Silver. The current building is a nightmare when it comes to sustainability. All of the windows are single-paned. There's very little insulation. The amount of energy loss in the current building is rather mind-boggling. This new building will be dramatically more sustainable. We're thinking about everything from materials to heating and cooling to lighting. We have decided to go with the most expensive but also the most energy efficient heating and cooling package that we could select for the building. Even though it adds some cost, we think, first of all, that cost will be recouped over time, but second of all, that it's consistent with the college's philosophy on sustainability. So it'll be very, very difficult to achieve something like LEED Platinum on, as we did with Markham Hall, in part because this is a renovation of an older building. But certainly it will be, I would guess, at least the second most sustainable building on campus and at least comparable in its sustainability to the Leonard Center.
Great, thanks. Karen, class of 1984 in Washington, has a great question. She notes that, of course, one of the important things alumni can do to help support the Janet Wallace Project is to contribute financially, but she's wondering if there's other ways that alumni can help advance the project.
Well, if there are alumni, and this is true of alumni in any area, whether it's medicine or business or nonprofit work or the arts, alumni who work in those disciplines can be enormous resources to students and very powerful ambassadors for the college. We have a small staff. We have one president, and we have a few dozen people who work combined in our development and alumni and communications offices. 25,000 alumni. We can have the ability to generate excitement about a project or the college exponentially by getting alumni to talk about it. So simply having alumni talk with enthusiasm about the importance of the arts to a first-rate liberal arts education can be exactly the kind of thing that does inspire people to support the project and to support students. I want to repeat what I said in my opening comments. I really want to put a plug in right now for alumni and parents who are willing to provide help to students who are moving from the college into the world beyond the college. It's a challenging and sometimes frightening time for them. And one of the benefits of going to a place like McAllister should be that you graduate into a supportive community. So anything that you can do, and it can be as easy as letting the alumni or the career development office have your contact information and know that you're willing to talk to a student who's interested in a field in which you work. It could be as simple as that. That makes an enormous difference in the lives of our students. But certainly for the Janet Wallace Project, being an ambassador among others for the importance of the arts will help us a great deal.
Great. I think you touched on this, but I have a couple questions, both from parents who are wondering what's going to happen with rehearsal and performances during the renovation of the concert.
Right. That was asked earlier, and I didn't address it. Obviously, anytime you do a renovation project, that is the single largest challenge. And so we're trying to do a few different things. Obviously, we are working right now and have been working for some time on finding alternative spaces. And there's a lot of variety in what we'll be doing. Excuse me. In some cases, music faculty will be teaching their lessons quite literally out of their homes. So Mark Mazzullo, who's the chair of the music department, will be giving keyboard lessons in his home. We are looking into renting space. There is a small office building on Snelling Avenue that is vacant, and looking actually into renting that building, so that we can use it for both classroom and office space during the renovation. And then, of course, for the central performance and rehearsal spaces, we're relying on our sister institutions in the Twin Cities. We are fortunate in having a high concentration of schools nearby. And this is what we did when we renovated the Leonard Center. We have acted as a home for many of those institutions when they've done renovations. So we'll be using concert halls and performance spaces and other venues. And finally, we'll adapt our own spaces. So that my guess is that we'll be using the theater, which will remain open during this, for a wider variety of programming than we currently do. It obviously isn't a concert hall and isn't optimal, but it still could be used, I think, for certain purposes, certain performance purposes, while the concert hall is being renovated.
I think the next question is both an invitation and a question here. What are the president's personal goals vis-a-vis the academic mission of the college for the next decade? And a fine meal awaits for you in New Orleans if you choose to meet with the Greater New Orleans alumni.
Well, I appreciate that, and I love New Orleans, and I love New Orleans food. I think, you know, it certainly goes without saying that we want to preserve the quality of what we do. That is, academic excellence is the bedrock of everything that happens at McAllister. But it seems to me beyond that, that it is becoming increasingly important for colleges to understand what their distinctive strengths and opportunities are and to build on those. Not every college can be all things to all people. And I think that's something that higher education in America is beginning to realize. It just doesn't work economically. And so I think in the case of McAllister, we have certain strengths and advantages that we absolutely have to take advantage of. I think one is the commitment to educating students to be global citizens and a strong international component, and I think we need to continue to build on that. Another is a location in an urban area that provides countless opportunities to students that they would not have were we located in another geographic location. So I think strengthening our connections in our academic programs to the Twin Cities is enormously important. A program like the one we have right now with the Mayo Clinic is a great model. We've developed a program with the Mayo Clinic that allows students to work on community health issues and on medical issues with people from the Mayo Clinic, and the people at the Mayo Clinic just love it, and our students love it. It prepares them both practically and in other ways for work that they'll do beyond the college. It seems to me that that is a model that we should try to replicate with as many organizations in the Twin Cities as possible. So I think building on our strengths, recognizing what our strengths are, and being willing to make difficult decisions about what we won't be and won't do, all of that's really going to be critical in the next 10 years.
Great, thanks. We have time for just a couple more questions here before we wrap up. And I think I'm going to go back to the philosophical side of things here. A parent wondering about the value of a liberal arts degree in a market-driven society. And do you encourage students to take business-oriented classes or follow their passions?
Well, I think, you know, as the parent of a student who's a first-year student in college, I am keenly aware of the importance of practicality. So I certainly always encourage students to think, at least partially, about the practical implications of what they're studying and how it might impact their careers beyond McAllister. But it seems to me that the single most important thing that a high-quality liberal arts education provides and the single most valuable thing that we could give to our students in practical terms is not vocational preparation in a narrow sense, but a set of skills that are adaptable to a variety of different potential professions. I'm sure many of you have heard this number, but right now the average person changes careers or jobs 6 times over the course of his or her lifetime. We cannot even begin to anticipate what the dominant jobs will be 10 or 15 or 20 years from now. And so the notion that we're preparing students for a particular job, it seems to me, is somewhat limiting. We're really preparing to have a particular set of skills that they can adapt to the jobs that will be available and the needs that the society will have. So I think that is what a liberal arts education does better than any other kind of education and what we need to do at McAllister.
Well, great. Thank you so much for your time today, Brian, and thank you to the numerous people who have registered and called in today from all over the United States and really all over the world. We will post an audio file of today's conference call within the next day or so. And we also want to know what you thought of this call, so please take a minute to fill out a brief evaluation that you'll be receiving by email. Do you want to have any closing comments for our audience today?
I want to thank everybody for taking the time out of the middle of, I'm sure for all of you, a busy day to devote some time and thought to McAllister, and please feel free, any of you. I could not obviously get to all questions, but I try to get to all my emails, so if you want to send them to me directly, feel free to do that, and I'll try to answer them.
Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great day.